We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the Beaver Sports Podcast, brought to you by Hong Kombucha, handcrafted with love in Bend, Oregon for Beaver Nation. Here are your hosts, Mike Parker and John Warren.
We are so excited about this week's edition of the Sports Podcast, presented by Hum Kombucha. Fizzy, delicious, antioxidants, probiotics, all organic ingredients, and made in Bend for Beaver Nation. Made with love, Hum Kombucha, our presenting sponsor for a conversation with Oregon State Assistant Coach Stevie Thompson, Senior Stephen Thompson. You've been here a while, Stevie, and I don't know whether, you know, I call you Stevie the Elder, your son Stevie the Younger, Stephen Junior, what, we go back and forth with it. And let's start right there with, you were always Stephen until the Dickie V phenomenon. What do you remember about when suddenly you became Stevie?
Well, that's growing up, I started college at 17. So I played my first college games at 17. So up until that point, I was Stephen Thompson. And nobody ever called me Stevie. People may have called me Steve, but never Stevie. And so I can't remember exactly, but sometime early into my college career, we played on ESPN, and Dick Vitale was the hot ticket back then. And he, one of the first plays I made, Stevie Thompson, look at that, Stevie Thompson. And the next thing I know, after that, everything was Stevie. It would be in print. You know, other commentators would call me that. And so, by, you know, a lot of people followed our team and recognized our team. So when they would hear it, it was Stevie. So when they had a chance to meet me, it was Stevie. And so after a while, I just got tired of saying, no, it's Steven, or it's this or that. So I go by Steve, Steven, or Stevie. So it doesn't matter.
Once Vitale gets a hold of you, you really had no more choice.
I didn't have a choice, because he wasn't going to let go of that. And that's the way it was for the next 4 years with him.
I think he did that with every player, just affectionately calling him, you know, Johnny or Davey, Stevie. So it's good that you rolled with it.
And then your kids then, I mean, I've heard Ethan and Stevie Jr. say, oh, yeah, man, that's kind of what they always knew you as. People have approached you. Mm-hmm. Both of your sons have said that throughout their lives, they've seen people approach you, mm-hmm. whether in L.A. or in reunions back to Syracuse. Mm-hmm. They kind of grew up knowing that mm-hmm. you were Stevie. And and had some real basketball cred. Your boys seemed to understand that.
Yeah, they did. They did. And it's funny because in the household, amongst our family and close friends, nobody calls me Stevie. So it wasn't like they heard it in that area. Yeah. Yeah, but you know, we'd be out or somebody recognized me, and it was always Stevie. So it was interesting because they kind of had it like when it first was happening, like, who are they talking to? Why are they calling them that? But yeah, they only call me Dad. So we don't have that mix up at all.
The best name of all.
We had a great conversation with you here in the Valley on our local show last week, and we want to revisit a lot of that. But just to kind of get into that, and you talked about the alley, and we'll talk about it. But when you were a kid trying to get into the alley, that's where the big kids played, not the driveway, but the alley. What was your childhood nickname?
I guess I didn't really have a childhood nickname. When I got to high school, I had maybe a size 14 as an eighth grader. Wow. So when I remember going to Crenshaw, and back then city schools didn't start in high school until the 10th grade. But anyway, I still had pretty big feet at that time, and they used to call me Foots, you know, and then as I started to play basketball, and mostly just at the high school, not around the city, but at the high school, they would call me S Money. So I had those two kind of nicknames during the high school time. Yeah, yeah. But after that, it just was Stevie. Yeah.
Visit Corvallis, a presenting sponsor. Experience Beaver Game Day fun. Live in Corvallis and extend your stay to take in all the Willamette Valley has to offer. Visit Corvallis. Come for the game and stay to play. And certainly the Thompson family visited Corvallis. Corvallis has been home. We'll get to that part of the story and kind of wrapping it up in a few minutes. It's been such a delight to see Stephen and Amy and the sons who call you Dad here. It just... really so glad that we're having an opportunity to pick up this conversation again, Stevie. And we did talk on our local show last week about, as John referred to, the alley and pickup basketball. So tell us what it was like to grow up where you did, what part of the city you grew up in, what sports you played, and just kind of, you know, how sports became a big part of your life.
Yeah, well, I grew up in South Central Los Angeles, and growing up in the neighborhood, I mean, it was kind of seasonal. So whatever sport was in, that's what the kids in the neighborhood played. And we would play tackle football without pads in somebody's front yard. We would play touch football out in the cement, but we like to get in the, you know, play tackle in somebody's front yard. And then we'd be in the streets, we'd play baseball and have fun with that. And then, but it seemed like basketball, still that was the sport everybody loved. And we would, in between playing those other sports, we would always go get a game of 21, a horse or something. Yeah. I had a court in my backyard, and a lot of the neighborhood kids would come by and play. And but the main court was in the alley. And really, when you were a youngster, you didn't really, you may have gone down there and watched those games, but you didn't play in them until you were either invited, but you were only invited is if they knew that you had real game. And so when I got to that level of, to be honest with you, I think I got into the game because they may have needed a player. Mm-hmm. And I was there watching, and then I was like, man, it was funny because when you're there, that was almost like an NBA tryout. That's the way I took it. It was like, man, I have to show what I can do, or this, I'll never have another opportunity to play with these guys, the older guys in the neighborhood. But I must have impressed because I was able to get back in those games. But that was a rite of passage in my basketball career.
Do you remember how old you were?
That probably had to be... probably 13 or 14 years old when that happened.
And what do you think the average age was of all the other guys?
Those guys were 19, 20, 21. I mean, these were the older guys, and these guys were late high school or out of high school when you played with those guys.
When you say the alley, Stevie, where was it? Was it the alley? I mean, behind your street where you grew up?
Well, behind, so where I grew up, what you have was, so my house, in outside of my backyard, there was an alley. Mm-hmm. So it was our row of houses going, the alleyway where you can go into your garage, uh-huh. and then the other set of houses on the other side. So it was literally the alley.
And a hoop, the good hoop set up, a solid hoop with a good backboard and net and so on.
It was good enough to it was, well, you know, I don't know, looking back, it probably wasn't a great hoop, yeah. but at that moment it was the best hoop around because that's where everybody was. So yeah. it didn't matter what the hoop was.
And what were those games like? I mean, you said you aspired to get there, and you got there at a young age and played up with men. Yeah. What were the nature of those games and how competitive were they? What kind of stuff went on in those games?
Well, it was very physical games. And I mean, a lot of – you had to play. And then you also had to watch yourself, too, because a fight would break out yeah. at any moment. So it was – you also played in some fear. And then you – you know, as a young guy, you didn't want to – hit the wrong guy because you didn't know what you had to deal with after the repercussion. So you had to kind of watch yourself and know you had to show your game, one, but you also better not have shown it too much of against the wrong player because now you might have to deal with something else. and so, but it was still fun. I mean, you still wanted to be there. That was the place to be, but you had to watch yourself.
When did you start to get letters? When did you know that you were on the radar of major college basketball?
Probably not until what happened. Well, I went to a high school in Long Beach, California, St. Anthony's, as a ninth grader. And that ninth grade year, I played JV basketball. I got moved up to the varsity as a ninth grader for the playoffs. And I think that team may have only played one or two games in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And maybe I played a minute. But after that, I transferred to Crenshaw High School. And as a 10th grader, I had made the varsity team. I was going to be a starting member. And at that point, Crenshaw was a legendary high school. I mean, a lot of city and state championships. My high school coach is in different Hall of Fames. I mean, it was a legendary place to play. So going in as a 10th grader and making the starting five was great. But they had a rule then, if you didn't change address, you know, if I didn't move into the district or this, you would be ineligible to play varsity. And we didn't move. I didn't move into the district, but we didn't know this rule until like the day or two before the season started. Oh. So I remember looking at this court here, the varsity practiced on this side, the JV on the other side. And I remember right in practice, I think the assistant coach came with the news while I'm practicing with varsity that I wouldn't be able to play varsity as a 10th grader. And I literally right then walked to the JV court and played JV basketball as a 10th grader. And so this is kind of a long-winded here, but now the summer between my 10th and 11th grade year, we played in a big so I was able to play varsity now mm-hmm. during that summer, but we played in a big tournament. They called it the Watts Summer Games. Back then they were really huge. It was all different sports throughout the city and all the high schools participated in it. But anyway, our team won that tournament, and I was like really one of the key players or the key player to win that. And so now that leads me into my 11th grade year. And I'm still, at this point, I'm not a highly recruited.
You're not even a varsity high school player.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not a highly recruited player yet because still nobody really knows about me because they didn't have a chance to see me. Mm-hmm. But my 11th grade year, now the season hits, we win the city and the state championship. I was city player of the year, and now people are starting to know who I am. But really when it hit off was I went to a national camp, Nike All-American camp back at Princeton University the summer between my 11th and 12th grade year. And then I think after that camp, I finished like the sixth rated player in the country. That's as high as I got to. Wow. And now everybody's taking notice because I performed so well there. Plus winning the city and state championship. Now teams like Syracuse, Duke, those were my final two choices. And they're starting to, teams from back east are starting to know who I am as well.
You could have gone to any college you wanted to.
I could have had a good choice, I should say that.
Yes. Where was UCLA, USC, and Pac-10 schools then when you were starting to be recruited on the national level? I mean, and why not UCLA, for example?
Yeah, they were there. And growing up, I always wanted to go to UCLA. That's what most kids want to go at basketball, especially at that time. But as I was being recruited, the Pac-10 was maybe only sending one team to the tournament, and they were you know, the East Coast teams, the Big East was just starting. The Big East, ESPN was just starting. So the Big East was on, Syracuse was on TV on the ESPN once a week, and then we would be on CBS. So I was on national, you know, that program was on national TV twice a week. So that's how I got to watch them and see them and really know who they were. But still loved, you know, still wanted to go to UCLA. But at that time when that recruiting happened, Walt Hazard was the coach. I love Walt Hazard. His son went to Crenshaw High School. When I was a senior, his son was a sophomore. But at the time, they didn't know his job was kind of, they didn't know if he was going to be there or stay. And had I chose to go there, I think he would have been gone after 2 years. So all those things came, all those factors came into play, you know, the situation in the Pac-10 at the time and the coach at the time. Then all the, what do you call it, the publicity and the putting on the big stage that the Big East at that time had to offer.
Well, did Oregon State, for example, Jimmy Anderson, I mean, did you get some run from Oregon or Oregon State or other Pac-10 schools?
Right, to be honest with you, I can't remember. Okay. I can't remember. I don't, for surely don't remember Oregon, for sure. I remember Oregon State because I, once again, I followed the Pac-10, and I remember watching them on TV, Jose Ortiz and those teams back AC. Then, A.C. Green. I remember watching those because it was always a Pac-10 game on in Los Angeles growing up to watch. I can't remember where they were in the recruiting process, but I do remember the three teams that I remember most is UCLA, USC, and Stanford.
Okay. Yep. Interesting.
Stevie Thompson, our guest on the podcast, brought to you by the Heat Pump Store, your local ductless heating and cooling experts. Join the ductless revolution.
We were talking, Jim Boylan's taken over now at Chicago with the Bulls, and some players were upset about two-hour practices and doing push-ups and even watching film immediately after a loss. It got us to thinking, well, Stephen Thompson will join us for the podcast today. We'll ask him, what was it like under Jimmy Boeheim? What were your practices like? Was it grueling? How hard was it playing for Syracuse?
He was. I mean, we had hard practices. I mean, he worked here and all that, but it was fun. He was really what you call a player's coach, and he made it. I don't want to say player friendly, but we would get in, we would do our work, and he would let you play, and then we'll be out. And so he kept it really simple, and he was dealing with so many, and any coach. Here at Oregon State, you have to be really good at managing people.
CEO.
Exactly. And so that's what Jim Boeheim was really good at when I was there. He had so many different personalities from all different parts of the country. But even here at Oregon State with Coach Tinkle, he has to do the same thing, too. And I think we do a good job in our program of not only coaching our guys and coaching them hard, but also managing the different personalities and the different people from different parts of the country.
Well, we got to see a little bit of you during the St. Louis game. They came up anytime that a new broadcast outfit covers a Beaver game, they dig into the archives for stuff on you or even Wayne. We got to see some old footage, the old short shorts. I tease only because I'm from the era too, and some great moves. Was there anybody that you played against in your collegiate career that you just? It was just you couldn't believe you're playing against them, or they weren't yet big enough until they got to the NBA.
No, I probably the best player that gave me the most trouble in college basketball to guard, because I was known, I could score, but I was really known as a defensive player as well, was Sean Elliott. And I remember playing him my sophomore year. We played in, what is the tournament in Alaska? Is that
Great Alaskan
Shootout? Yeah. And I think we played them in the finals, and they had a great team. It was Sean Elliott. I remember the point guard was Kenny Lofton that played in the major league. I can't remember if Kerr was there, Steve Kerr was there or not. But anyway, Sean Elliott was really hard to guard, and he was, you know, it was fun taking that challenge to play against him. But I also remember, I mean, it was some, I played against so many, many good players, playing Georgetown, and Reggie Williams was a really tough player. Mark Jackson at St. John's, Billy Donovan at Providence. Probably the most imposing team was Georgetown when they had both Mutombo and Alonzo Mourning. Yeah. And I mean, you had to go in there, you throw anything up, they were blocking it. So if you didn't go in there to try to dunk it or finish strong, it was going to get thrown at you.
Do you have any kind of relationship, or you stay in touch, or at the very least phone numbers in your contacts of some of these famous guys you played against?
Yeah, some of them, and some of them are coaches now, and you see them on the road, and you know, it's hard to keep in touch with everybody, but yeah, some of these guys I still have contact with and keep in touch with them.
Let's close with some thoughts that we were so we were enamored of the stories, not only from the alley, were there some other players who went on to D1 in the NBA from the alley, first of all, that you remember, or did you rise out of that neighborhood and playing at Syracuse and getting some run in the NBA?
Yeah.
Were there others in the alley that you played against that were D1 or pro players?
We had some players that that weren't in that alley. I played in the Park and Rec League down the road, and there was a kid, Otis Livingston, went on to play at Kansas. And I think he's a commentator in the East Coast now, doing something in broadcasting. I think he's in New Jersey now. But no, and directly right in that alley, no. But I will tell you what, there probably were a lot of NBA players in that alley.
Yeah.
So,
right, and it takes a lot. It's not just the talent level. Yeah. You have to. Yep. You ended up getting a great education and an opportunity at Syracuse. Yeah. But Reggie Miller the other day regaled Dan Patrick with a story about, hey, you know, Dan was asking him about summer ball or pickup games or whatever else, and Reggie mentioned you as one of the best in those contacts. So what do you remember about Reggie, and did you have some good games and good run against Reggie, and who were some of the other players in summer league or wherever else that you went up against and played with?
Well, Reggie, I got a chance to play against him a lot during my professional career, during the springs and summer when my season was over. A lot of NBA and players that played overseas would go play at UCLA, and Reggie Miller was one of the guys. So, I mean, it was great runs there. And, you know, every Lake Magic Johnson was a staple there. Reggie Miller, James Worthy, Byron Scott. But then the players from out of town would come in. Patrick Ewing, Juwan Howard, Penny Hardaway, Shaquille O'Neal. So it was a place during the summer, if you were around L.A. and an NBA player, that's where you went and got your workout in, up at UCLA. So it was great. And then, like I said, the other opportunity playing against Michael Jordan when he was filming the movie Space Jam, and he was retired from basketball but making a comeback. Got a chance to play with him for 1 month, every day for a month, and during his comeback and filming of the movie at Warner Brothers Studios. They made him a court right there.
Yeah, and you told us that Charles Oakley took that a little too serious.
I mean, Michael Jordan would go in the air, and just like you saw him play him on TV in the Eastern Conference Finals, he would do the same thing in that pickup run. It was amazing. But you want to know what? Michael Jordan just kept playing. He wasn't like he got mad. It was almost like he knew this was part of the workout.
Yeah.
He needed that to prepare himself to get back in the NBA.
And what about Magic? And just share with us, you know, if a game was close late, what you knew you were in for with Magic Johnson.
Yeah, I know he's going, next time I see him, he's going to hear this, because I've said now it'd be twice. But I mean, he was competitive, and that, once again, those games at UCLA were real intense games. And sometimes there were so many NBA All-Stars waiting for the next game. If you lost, it would take you a while. It's not like you're losing and you're just coming right back. But if when Magic had the ball and it was games to nine and it was 8-8 or 8-5 or whatever it was, and his team had eight and it was their ball, you might as well put the next team on, because no matter what happened, if they missed a shot, it was a foul, something happened, you wasn't leaving that side of the court until that ball went into the hole. But yeah.
That's great, funny. Sam. Now, we were talking about the reason we even got onto this track, John and I, on our local show, The Joe Beaver Show, wondering about in the value of that kind of ball, and even in the park or the alley where you got to hold the court, you got to win to keep playing. And some of the lessons you learned, Stevie, what you know, how valuable were those experiences? And having to kind of rely on your own resources and wits and maybe not as organized as current generation players have.
Well, those, when you're in, out recruiting and you talk to different people and you talk about how the court you learned life lessons, those moments really have prepared me for life because it taught me how to be tough. It taught me how to persevere. It taught me how to fight for what I want. And it also taught me, you know, especially seeing guys like Magic and Jordan, how they approached a pickup game. It showed me how to be really great, how passionate you have to be at what you do at any moment when you do it. And not only when the lights come on and every 15 or 20,000 are watching, it's the moments where nobody's watching that you prepare for greatness. And those are things that I've learned through the sport and I carry it on to me today just in life. And
can we still see that? I mean, can you see a kid and say, okay, there's some street in him? I mean, something that, of value in that? Or have we gotten to the point with so much travel ball and elite teams, AAU and all that circuit, have we lost a little bit of something that you had to fight for when you were younger?
Once again, I think it's just a little different now. I think all those things could be found in the way the system is set up today. I'm looking at the system from a different lens, but I've had two sons to go through this way, and I see the fight in them. I see it in them, and they've not only been raised that way, but they've also had to go through this system and fight for what they want. And really, a big way to do it is because all these kids are getting ranked and all this or that. Well, every time I know one of the things that, you know, Stephen and Ethan in particular and a lot of kids, that when they had a chance to play against that quote-unquote higher-ranked player, well, they were trying to make their name on that player. So you still can find it out there, but it's just a little different.
Was Ethan named for anybody in your past as far as basketball?
No. My wife and I came up, when we had Ethan, when Amy was pregnant with Ethan, we didn't know a boy or a girl, and we didn't want to know until he was born. So we had came up with Ethan. We did some research, and we just fell in love with the name Ethan. And I think if we had a daughter, it would have been Alexis Brianna. And so we had our names set, but because we kind of did some research, but not because of a basketball player.
I want to get a thought about the joy you guys are having together as a family here as we wrap it up. But one last thing. I've asked both Ethan and Stephen Jr. about one-on-one battles with you growing up. What were those like? And was there a time you would honestly say, they finally beat the old man, they got me, you had to be proud, and at the same time, no, as you've hit 50 now. Yes. What about those moments? And just growing up playing ball with your kids, but the day when you were going as hard as you could and they still beat you one-on-one.
Yeah, well, that was a proud moment for me. And because to be honest with you, I was not going to give it up. They had to beat me. And when that moment hit, we talked about a rite of passage. That was kind of, for me, theirs, because, and maybe I'm giving myself too much credit at that point, at that stage anyway, but you had to get through me to know that you can tackle the Pac-12 or somebody else. Yeah. And when they did that, it was humbling, but I was happy for them because I knew that, hey, these guys they're taking this serious. And when they beat me, they that was a goal of theirs. They wanted to beat me.
And it was legit.
And it was legit. And it's not like we just were having fun playing either. This was like they went and worked out and they thought they were ready. Dad, let's play now. You know, they didn't get it at that moment. They worked out a little more time passed. Then let's go now. Mm-hmm. And now that they've done it, they still want to do it because they still like kicking my behind.
Were you really swatting their shots when they were 5 years old?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's no free cheese. You know, they've got to earn everything they get. So,
last thing, Stevie, thanks for your time on this. But what about being here with Amy, with your two sons, being here at Oregon State? What it's been like to see them? The pride you have in your sons and the joy you're having with them in Corvallis at Oregon State. We're glad that, you know, your paths have brought you all here, but what's it been like for you?
Well, having the whole family together, and you know, when you have children, when you can have everybody under one roof, it's a special moment, because as children get older, those moments, you know, are far and few between. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when I left, Ethan was a sophomore in high school and Stephen was a senior. So really, I knew I would get Stephen in 8-9 months, but I saw him every month. I went to at least 9 or 10 of his games as a senior in high school, so I still saw him. And Amy would up here at least once a month, and I was L.A. is a place where I recruit, so when I would go recruit L.A., I would stay at our house in L.A. So, but but being away from Ethan on a day-to-day basis for 3 years was very tough. And, you know, I had to, you know, pray and try to figure out how we're going to work this out. And when he decided to come to Oregon State, that was a true blessing, because now not only, you know, me being able to coach my son, but also some of that time lost, we're getting back here during his college years, because most times you lose that time during college years.
Was it close? Was it a close call of him choosing Syracuse?
I don't think so, but when that offer there got him to thinking, because when he was a young kid, that's all he knew was Syracuse. Yeah. Because I had played there and we would sit and watch their games, and man, I want to go there, and that's what he knew. So when he got that offer, it was like, oh man, I'm happy he got it, but that's not don't give it to him. But I think during those 3 years that he was still in LA and I was here, during the summers when he would come up, because he couldn't come up during the school year. I think maybe one time he came up during the school year, because he had just a heavy load in high school with not only academics, but his season as well. They played a national schedule. So, but his summers coming up here, and I think that first summer, the first summer when I took the job and Stephen was leading into his senior year, Stephen, Ethan, and Trace got to really get a good bond that summer. And I think that helped Stephen's decision, that he could come up here and he saw what a magnificent place this was on his own. Not dad coaches there and I'm just going there. He saw the people, the community, you know, the students and all that. He saw it and fell in love with it on his own. And I think Ethan having 3 years of seeing that and building those relationships, really the decision was easy for him to come here because of that.
Well, we're glad you did, Stevie. This is not the time to talk about Texas A&M or anything else. That we've appreciated the perspective. But yeah, go ahead.
Well, I just want to kind of end this. This is a big game this weekend, and I want as many people and as many supporters, many fans could come out and support that game. And first of all, it's a great opportunity to play in the Moda Center, to get Beaver Nation into the Moda Center, but it's also a big game, and we need to really have great support, and we really play well at home, and we've gotten better on the road. I think we've won 3 out of 5 on the road away from home this year, and so we need to still have that advantage of our Beaver Nation there, and it's always been that way. But I'm on the air now, and I just absolutely. I thank Beaver Nation for going to support us everywhere. To be honest with you, even in St. Louis, we had some people there, and Virgin Islands. God, we had a lot of people there. It was magnificent. So a lot of times you don't get the opportunity to thank people for supporting the program like that, I think we've been going to the Moda Center did we go up our first year, 5 years? I can't remember, but we've had great support there, and I look forward to seeing Beaver Nation there Saturday.
We look forward to seeing you too, and Ethan and Stevie and the rest of the guys. Thanks again for taking time for us, Coach. We appreciate the perspective on some great days in the past and a lot of great days ahead beginning Saturday night at Moda Center. Thanks for the time.
Thank you.
Johnny, I'm going to have you give that final word about being a Beaver, having its perks. Thanks, Coach.
Thank you, Coach.
We've had a great time with the podcast, some really fascinating material we barely scratched the surface on. But the student, I mean, Stevie and Ethan are tremendous students, as was Stephen the Elder, setting a good example. Academics, very important. And I mentioned this to Stevie the other day, and I think, yeah, maybe I could take this on, too, as he's in a master's program right now.
That's right. Oregon State University graduates are already qualified for a scholarship towards earning their OSU MBA in Portland. Bend, here in Corvallis, are online. Flexible and customized options will help advance your career trajectory. Visit mba.oregonstate.edu/beaver today. And it was just a fun conversation with Stephen. I like him. He's a great guy, and it was fun to watch him then and have him be a part of the family now.
Johnny, that's going to do it for this week's edition. Thanks to all of you for listening. We'll have another podcast up next week. Thanks for joining us. So long, everybody.
This has been the Beaver Sports Podcast, brought to you by Hum Kombucha, handcrafted with love in Bend, Oregon, for Beaver Nation. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding right your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.